shoot me if it... Little Ewoks. An entire empire brought to its knees by small, furry creatures.
That's my point exactly.
Leave him alone.
I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Choose a side in a Clone Wars.
Hello, and we're back for the second part of our Clone Wars on Caravan of Courage and the Battle for Endor. We've spent almost an hour talking about Caravan of Courage, and we've still got another film to talk about, and still to compare them as well and see what is the best of the worst, if there's even a trophy for something like that. So I'm back here with Angry Andy Reviews. And off air, you were saying that maybe we've been a little unnecessarily harsh on these films. You know, people out there may enjoy them and may have watched them as a kid and have fond memories. And, you know, more power to you. You know, if you like them, you like them. But we, as adults, rewatching and watching them for the first time, did not enjoy them.
No. I feel like we just need to be clear on that. We're not crapping on these because it's
popular, it's a good thing to do. There's a lot of people out there that will do it for the sake of doing it. But
yeah,
again, we're gonna
literally, talk- literally say something's rubbish just to get views or opinions or whatever. We're being very analytical, we're being very critical, we're really, really looking at it to try and find some elements of positivity. And I have said, like, my main elements of positivity are the things they've uplifted from these stories into main canon. And there's one particular thing in here which I do think, in Battle for Endor, that I do think is responsible for creating some really good characters that we see later on in the Clone Wars specifically. And one of my favourite characters, I think, is directly descended from a character in Battle for Endor.
Oh, we'll definitely get to that, because I like those set of characters that you're talking about. I'm going through the Clone Wars animated show on Disney Plus at the moment, and I've gotten to that point, and I really, really enjoy those characters. I think it's some of the best stuff within the Clone Wars. You know, there's a lot of silly things as well. You know, like R2-D2.
Oh yeah.
R2-D2 going for a spa day, you know.
I mean, the Clone Wars is a, you know, it's a much loved animation series, but that has some horrific episodes in it.
Absolutely,
you know,
most of them.
It's not all sunshine and roses. Some of them are awful, like Star Trek: The Next Generation. Some of the episodes are purely filler and absolutely awful, and the pacing doesn't work. You know, you get it with everything. But with these films, yeah, it's not good.
No,
they're not good.
They are probably the worst Star Wars thing I've ever seen. I will say. I have not seen the holiday special in full. I've seen clips of it, but I've never actually bothered to watch it. But currently, these are the worst Star Wars things I've ever seen.
I'd say if you can find the holiday special, I would watch it just to see the sheer, unmitigated, poorly made decisions. You know, just the decision to do it, just so it's so poor. It's like watching a theatre show completely collapse. You know, in every way you can possibly imagine, it's just mess. It's a disaster. It doesn't hit tonally at all. Kind of like these films, they just don't hit tonally at all.
My one positive takeaway from this, it's really nice, it's actually a really nice part of the story. Director Joe Johnston, fans will know as the director of The Rocketeer, the director of The Wolfman, and the director of Captain America the First Avenger, got his start with Lucasfilm and was on set for Raiders, Indiana Jones, and he helped, I think he was a production designer, he helped create the world of Endor and the Ewoks. And even wrote some children's books about it. So he was fully involved in these films, fully involved in Return of the Jedi and previous Lucas films as well. But it was his like Endor was kind of his baby. You know, obviously Lucas was like, yeah, we're going to create this, but he's gone, right, I'm going to fully immerse myself and create that world. And he did that. And then after this film, Lucas said, you know what, you should go to film school. And he went, all right, I will. And then Lucas went, and I'm going to pay for it.
So that's just it. A lot of people cut their teeth on these features, on these films. Like I said, the music is really good. You know, the score is really good. The set designs are really good. The setting, the matte paintings that make the backdrop, they're really, really good. It's the last time you really see stop motion used in such a way in these films. You know, that in itself is something that you should treasure, really, because this is like, this shows the dying of, you know, the Ray Harryhausen kind of way of filming epics and things like that with creature effects and stuff like that. It's a shift from that into further practical effects and modelling and using animatronics, you know, that we see not long after, in less than 10 years, we see them with Jurassic Park and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see the shifts and you can see the building of people's careers here, you know. And we're not saying that, you know, it's all bad and it stems from, you know, the creatives and whatever. Yes, in terms of writing, I think George Lucas is probably at fault for a lot of this. But the honesty of the filming and some of the techniques, you know, they are quite good. It's just the final execution, be it editing, direction, you know.
There's a multitude of problems. But what you were saying about people cutting their teeth on these films is, apparently it was kind of a lot of people at Lucasfilm and at ILM, I believe, didn't have much experience on set or on any production. So this was almost entirely a kind of work experience project, both of these films.
Yeah, definitely.
And it does show a little.
Yeah.
It does
reek of like university filmmaking. You know, like film school kind of filmmaking, you know, where it's rough around the edges to a fault. You know, it does have those things, but then like with a lot of film school films, they do have little quirks and charms. Yeah, I just think it's,
and I think it was a good platform, because again, it's TV, there's less budget, there's less possibility of failure. And this first Caravan of Courage was not a failure. It was watched by millions. The ratings were huge numbers it brought in.
It had a very small theatrical, like full cinematic release in Germany for quite a few weeks, and it made money. It was making money, and that's the thing that people latched on to the ideas of the Ewoks. So when you say, oh, the Ewoks were rubbish, back then people loved them. Yeah. They loved them. They liked the idea of the Ewoks.
I've got a question for you, Andy. I know you're talking about the Clone Wars and some of the episodes. Now, I've turned off the Clone Wars recently after Jar Jar basically has sex with like a Bollywood alien. That was when I kind of...
Oh, God.
They made Jar Jar a romantic lead in the story, and Mace Windu's like, what the hell am I doing here? And I was like, no, I'm going to... I think I'm not going to watch any Clone Wars because there was a second part to it. And I was like, oh, nah, I can't do it. So I turned it off for the time being. I am going to go back to it. But my question for you, Andy, is in a parallel world, we didn't get Ewok movies. We got two Jar Jar Binks movies. Would you have rather have watched those or this? That's my question to you.
I'd rather watch these purely because Jar Jar talks too much.
Absolutely. and the Ewoks are, like we said, they're hardened warriors. They're good. They're skillful. Jar Jar Binks is a fucking idiot. You know, I know he gets a lot of stick, and you know, Spaced. You know, we're a fan of the TV show Spaced, and I think they put it best when they were like, you know, the Ewoks are shaft compared to Jar Jar Binks. You know,
yeah,
and
you can explain Wicket's silliness in Return of the Jedi because he's only a youngster, so they literally crafted Wicket as being the age of Warwick Davis at the time. So he's a baby. He's still a young child, but he does have that warrior instinct as well, because he does carry a spear around. You know, with Jar Jar, he comes from a warrior race as well. These are warriors. The people of Naboo were terrified of the Gungans because they could appear out of water at any point. They could travel through the cracks of the in the earth, you know, the caverns, and you know, just appear up and surround them and use guerrilla tactics. But Jar Jar, as a character, completely undermines the feel of the Gungans. So the Gungans were probably like, you know, the Phantom Menace's equivalent to, you know, the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi. But because of Jar Jar's complete ineptitude and stupidity, you don't get the effect. And you don't feel sad that loads of Gungans die either. And that's annoying. So even in the face of battle, when Jar Jar's, you know, accidentally destroying tanks left, right, and center, you know, in the battle of Endor in Return of the Jedi, you see Wicket, you know, trying to mimic what other people are doing and, you know, hurting himself or whatever, but he never gets in the way. He doesn't get in the way, and he doesn't take away from the fact that Ewoks do get killed. Mm. And there's a really sad moment in it as well see an AT-ST blow on the way. And I remember crying, actually,
really,
when I watched it when I was a child. And that Ewok rolls over and tries to wake his friend up, and then there's just nothing. That's really sad. And you don't get any of that in Phantom Menace because it's all about Jar Jar.
Yeah. Well, so Jar Jar for me is so dangerous. Like I know they rewrote it.
Yeah, Jar Jar is the reason the war continues. He's the reason the Clone Wars happens. So he's directly responsible for the Empire taking over, which is why all those theories about him being a secret Sith Lord are quite funny.
Yeah. But yeah, like, and that's through his stupidity and his you know, his ineptitude, like you said, and his naivete as well.
Yeah. Palpatine manipulates him perfectly. That's why we've talked about it before. Watching the prequels now as an adult, I like them more than I did when I was younger, purely because of Palpatine. I can see the inner workings of Ian McDiarmid's characterization, the little flares of looks and glances that he does in those films. Brilliant, because you can see him manipulating characters, and I love it. Yeah, it's just, I couldn't watch those episodes you talk about in the Clone Wars with Jar Jar.
Mm.
I zoned out completely.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what happens in them, and I love the Clone Wars series.
Yeah, I just can't, I know the actor gets a lot of stick, and he's struggled with
it. Ahmed Best, he shouldn't. He did what he was told to do, again, a product of direction and writing. Yeah. He did what he was told to do, and a lot of the actors that worked with him said he was brilliant. So that's why all the actors that worked with him, like Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson, they hold him in extremely high regard because of his professionalism, because of the way he got into a character.
Yeah.
And we didn't really see that in the films.
No. Again, I think it's a poor character, poorly created, poorly... You know, again, the actor is doing what he's told. He's been told by the director, do this, and he's doing it to the best of his ability. So I feel bad for him that, you know, maybe his career didn't take off the way he thought it might, or that he might get more roles. And I know I think he had some suicidal moments, which is awful.
It's bloody heartbreaking. Yeah. But he's been brought back into the fold of, like, you know, Star Wars. He's done a couple of, on Disney Plus, there's like, I think it's Disney Plus anyway, there's like a Jedi training academy, you know, like kind of like Crystal Maze kind of show
okay.
for kids. And he's the lead of that. He's dressed up as a Jedi, and he looks good. He looks fit and healthy, and he looks like he's enjoying himself. I think, you know, what, 1999, 22 years. It's a long time for him to, you know, they should have just brought him back in something, and, you know, have him feature more prominently as a different character.
For me, Jar Jar is, everything he does is by accident, whether it's a positive thing or it's a negative thing. And the negative ones cause a lot of deaths and a lot of, you know, a lot of problems for them. And you can't really, and like, if you had somebody, you're working with somebody like that, or you have somebody on your team like that, eventually you're going to go, I don't think it's worth it, in a way, to have someone this potentially good and bad, but more, you know, one day it could go so bad that the fucking planet explodes and we're all done for. But yeah, I just don't like, again, I like the Ewoks, and I think we've talked about why they're cool, why they're different, that this warrior race, that these can, you know, they'll eat humans, you know, don't fuck with the Ewoks. Yeah. They will eat you. I went down a particularly dark Ewok YouTube hole the other day. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later and kind of some of the stuff, but
yeah,
you know, they will eat a stormtrooper, they will eat a human, they'll eat...
Yeah, they were going to eat Luke, Han and Chewbacca.
And
they were going to eat them.
Yeah,
plain and simple. They were going to cook them and they were going to eat them.
Exactly, and that's, you know, obviously we're like, oh, it's cutesy, but yeah, they were going to eat them. Speaking of dark, let's talk about Battle for Endor. So initially, this film, George Lucas again got the same guys back together pretty much. I think there's new directors or a different team of directors, but I think everything else was pretty much the same. Lucas said, off the back of the last one, his daughter, that who he made it for, was quite upset that one of the Ewoks died. So there was an Ewok fatality at the end to save Sindel and Mace and the parents and everything. So she was quite upset by that. So he went, okay, no more Ewok deaths in this one, no Ewok deaths. However, he still went, I want to make this film about death. Because the last one was based on Goldilocks and the Three Bears. This one is apparently based on Heidi, which is a young girl living, like, you know, orphan girl living with a, you know, a likable curmudgeon of an old man. So you see that within the film. But he was like, I want it to be all about death. Credit to this film. It does open with a bang. You know, there's a battle.
Oh, yeah. And it's a lot more action-orientated, a lot more frantic, this film, compared to the last one. Last one was more ponderous and more sort of like, you know, let's think about it, let's talk about it. This one kind of just gets going immediately.
Yeah, it's kind of, it was a bit more introspective, the last one. It's more like the journey and stuff. And so we get this battle. All these guys randomly turn up, these aliens that live in a castle, as you mentioned prior.
Another castle.
And I think the villain's called Terak, I want to say. Terak?
Something like that, yeah.
And he's played by the guy who in the 1990s played Lurch in The Addams Family. That's the same actor. He basically just starts off with a bang. You've got all these people. You've got a witch called Charal, I think her name is. She's involved, and they're looking for a power. So, like you said, we've recast. The dad has been recast, and he's trying to fix the space cruiser that crash landed in the last film. And they're after the power. And the power happens to be like the battery or the power source.
Some kind of power source from the ship.
Yeah, it's a
you believe it holds mystical powers and all this.
Yeah, so they're after that and they take that, and in the ensuing battle, everybody dies. All the humans die.
Yeah.
Apart from the little Sindel who Wicket saves and takes off. How did you feel about going from the previous ending, which as I've gone over, I fucking hate, to go straight into this, and all the human characters they built up, you know, this big story, and like, oh, we're happy, and then they're dead.
Yeah, I mean, just to put it in that perspective, literally, Caravan of Courage ends with the family reunited, and they're going to go away and fix the ship, and they'll live happily ever after. Within 5 minutes, the family is completely obliterated, literally completely obliterated. You see Sindel's running around, and she sees Mace basically just shielding his already dead mother at this point from blaster fire. And he's literally just hammering as many of these, I'm going to call them orcs because they look like orcs, as many of these orcs as he can. And he tells Sindel to run. Probably the best bit of Mace's acting, Eric Walker, you know, probably the best bit we see of Eric Walker as Mace. You know, his screen time is 33 seconds in this film. That is it. And all we see of him, he's got like a couple of cuts on his face. He's bleeding. And he just turns around and he goes, run, just run. I'll hold them off as much as I can. And you see him just hammering down fire. He drags away the mother into a bit of shelter, a bit of cover. And then it blows up and he's dead. And you know he's dead because all the family are wearing these bracelets that have like a heartbeat sensor on them. And you know he's dead because Sindel looks at hers and it's flashing green and then it flashes red.
Yeah.
And he's gone. They're all dead. And literally... There's no sort of stopping to sort of say, oh, okay, why? Because the next scene, Sindel finds her father, and again, her father just goes, run, just run. And he does the same thing, tries to hold them off, and is killed immediately. It doesn't quite fit for me, because of the ending of Caravan of Courage, to have them all be so completely and a bit pointlessly massacred straight away. I mean, you see these marauders like attacking the Ewok village and taking away Ewoks and carting them up. And my question is, why were the marauders not carting away these humans? Because if they're using them for slaves, you would have thought, okay, the humans would be better slaves because they're bigger, stronger, taller. And maybe they could be used. Maybe they can explain this power source that we're looking for. I don't know why the decision was made to massacre the family. I really don't. It threw me out immediately because I went, okay, I'm all for twists and turns, but why have you done this after the ending of Caravan of Courage? It doesn't fit. And these are only a year apart, probably not even that in terms of release.
it's very abrupt as well. Like Mace gets killed, but I had to rewind it because I was like, because she goes, he's dead. And I'm like, is he? Because yeah. Even the shot, so he picks up his mum's body, who's clearly not the same actress.
Yeah, you don't see her face. You don't see her face. The mother's obviously a stunt woman.
Yeah. Carries the body.
The dad's completely different.
Yeah.
So it's only Mason Sindel that are the same actors, and Warwick Davis as well. They're the only same characters from Caravan of Courage that we know of. Probably some of the Ewoks as well, like. But.
Oh yeah, yeah. I imagine. I know that. You know the little person from Bad Santa.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's in it, isn't he?
Yeah, he plays one of the Ewoks as well. Now, yeah, we see Mace take. You know, he's firing his blaster. He's very fond of his blaster in the last film, and he's carrying his mum into the hut. And then there's a couple of blasts and a couple of explosions, and the aliens the orcs, we'll call them, are shooting. But it's never like there's never a shot, an identifying shot, to say that they've shot that hut.
Yeah,
it's just an explosion.
Yeah, it's a distant shot, isn't it? Sindel turns around and she sees a massive explosion, and then she runs a bit further, and then she looks at her wrist. And it all the indicator flashes red, and then she makes the decision that they're dead there. But to me, that's like, we can't really show it.
Yeah,
we want them to die, so here's a MacGuffin to explain that they are dead.
Yeah. Well, it was those life monitors or whatever they are were in the first film.
Yeah, they're in. That's how they knew the parents were still alive, and that they should go and find them because the heartbeat sensors were still going. But fantastic range on those devices.
I know. But they never really explained how they worked, and I kind of wish there was a bit more kind of is it on heartbeats, what is it, and then even looking at them when they're like bleep bleep bleep, it's not like bleeping the light, green light's going, the red light's going, the blue light's going, I'm like what do all those indicate, what does that tell me, which was fuck all basically. And for example, what happens if you know it gets removed or it gets damaged? Do you just assume people are dead?
Yeah.
How does that work? Yes. So we've opened with a massacre in this kids' film. Oh, for kids.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's fine. You can have tension and death and misery in kids' films, but it just doesn't fit. It just doesn't fit. Doesn't feel right for the film. It's almost like they went, we need something drastic to separate this, so just kill everyone.
And then for the rest of the film, all you hear is Sindel talking about fucking death. Like, she's like, my family are dead, your pilot is dead, everyone is dead, why will I be dead soon, I'm having a nightmare, I'm gonna be dead,
why should we bother, we'll all be dead,
you know.
What? And
again, her acting has improved very slightly, but I know.
Yeah, it is.
Not by much, but, you know, fair credit to her. I know when they hired her, she couldn't memorize the lines and they would have to feed her lines, and you can tell. A lot of the time where it's like, I really like the Ewoks. Beat, 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 smile. You know, it's like she forgets that she's supposed to be happy in that moment or what she's feeling. Yeah. And it's just you can see it and you can feel it and you're like, oh, if only. But yeah, she's clearly not an actress. Didn't act after this either. After these films, not surprising. But it's, you know, it's for certain kids. It's just not their bag, or it's not in their skill set. You know, and that's fair. But she does what she can. But it's still not great. The Wicket. Carries, you know, protects her, and don't they end up in a cave, don't they?
Yeah, so they're being chased by orcs, and basically they're chased into a mountainside, aren't they?
Mm.
And they manage to get into a cave, and the orcs fall to a grisly death, more death. and then they come across a big dragon thing, don't they? And the dragon carries her off, and Wicket's dead sad, and manages to find a flying machine.
Like that annoyed me because Sindel goes, oh no, now we're trapped, because he's kind of destroyed all the rock formation.
Yeah, there's no way out.
Yeah, and then there's a convenient hole in the wall and a glider. That seems to be that's a very 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 convenient thing.
Yeah, it's like somebody else was going to do this before, but we're not going to bother kind of looking too much into that.
No, off we go. Hey, yeah. I did quite laugh when she got picked up by the dragon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, it was stop motion, wasn't it? So it was a very Harryhausen effect. You know, you could see, like, her, like, writhing, you know, like you used to see in the old Greek
Jason, Jason the Argonauts,
all that. Yeah, with her, like, writhing. when people are getting eaten by dinosaurs in those old films, are like, oh god, you see them writhing and wriggling. Oh. It looks pretty funny. It doesn't have the effect of tension at all, because immediately, like, Wicket is able to distract it so that it drops her, and then
yeah,
she catches it. Oh, it's just, and then they land on the conveniently in an open plain, but conveniently enough that there's plenty of cover so the dragon can't get them, and then the dragon just fucks off. And it's I can't be bothered.
That's it. I mean, I could have done with more information about the dragon. I thought that was a cool design, a cool creature. Like, that's what I like. I like the creature designs and stuff, minus the spider.
The creatures that aren't,
that we don't know, is
we see every day in our in our lives,
or on Endor outside of these films. You know, it's something a bit different, something a bit new. I like that, and I like the work that goes into practical effects and stop motion and things like that. So
yeah,
I'll always dig that. Then they kind of, again, a bit depressing.
Yeah.
They start getting cold and start starving to death, basically.
Yeah. It's pretty horrible, actually. It's kind of like, oh god, what's the end game here? to die.
This is their Empire Strikes Back. You've had your new hope of Ewok movies, and this is your Empire Strikes Back. And they come across another human on Endor. No, they come across this. I think it's Teek or Teekle.
Yeah.
Which is like this fast-moving gremlin or goblin or something. Friendly.
That's what he is.
Yeah, friendly, but he's like Quicksilver, but furry, kind of thing. Move at speed. And then he leads them to Wilford Brimley's character, star of one of our favourite films, The Thing. And I have to say, I'm quite glad he turns up, because I was like, oh my god, good acting!
Yeah. But even then, he's completely exposed by terrible writing. Because some of his scenes are so flat, and it feels laboured. It feels like he's talking to a wall, because there's nothing to react to him.
Yeah.
It's just him trying to power through and show emotion. Because initially, he doesn't want to help them.
No.
He throws them out when he sees them in their house, when Teek brings them to the house. He's like, what are they doing here? I told you no strangers. Get out.
Yeah.
And then he kind of has that moment of like, fine, you can stay one night. You know, that trope that we always see when somebody rescues someone or something. And then they end up staying a little bit longer. But Sindel starts to have these kind of feelings or these visions. And she knows that she needs to go and, you know, find this power thing.
Mm.
It's all very weird. And what I find about this plot in particular, more so than Caravan of Courage, is it's convoluted as sin. It rarely sort of fits together. Even in its basic elements, it's kind of like, oh, we need to go here now. So just cut to it. Just get there. Just go there.
It's at the same time, it feels convoluted and flimsy. Like, it's very thin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so thin. The decisions they make that end up getting them to the castle to fight the main bad guy, I can't even remember the reason. I don't even know how they get there or why they get there. I know. Sindel gets trapped by the witch, doesn't she?
Yes.
Witch masks herself, and you know, looks like a dead, beautiful woman who says, "Oh, your family's still alive. I can help you. I can help you." And then tricks her, takes her away, and whatever. But then she escapes, and it all goes wrong, and they're all very confused, and it's just a confusing.
Yeah, I believe she's kidnapped because somehow the witch is like, because they have this power generator or power source, whatever it is, and they're like, oh, we can't use it. And the witch the witch kind of told the guy, again, Terak, I'm going to call him, and he's like, this is the power. We later find out that Wilford Brimley's character, Noah he's called, isn't it? His character's Noah.
Yeah, yeah.
His co-pilot in his ship went off to kind of find another power source for the ship to take off, and is captured by Terak years ago and is told about this power, and then you see this really shit pile of bones.
it's like a university pile of bones.
We just get that from a doctor, a medical examiner, and we just stick it there. And it's like, he told us. But then the witch seems to know more about it. But then, and he's like, yes, we need the power. Let's get the power. But then she didn't know how to fucking use it either. So I'm just like, why is she so keen on this if she didn't know how to? And she's like, the child must know how to use it. Clearly.
Yeah, it's so clear that they entered a dead end and didn't know how to get themselves out of it.
Yeah.
Like, we've got the power. We've got the power source. We've completed our mission. Oh, fuck. But when we've got gaping gaps of where the plot goes, we need to round this up. How do we round it up? Nobody knows how to use this power. Nobody really knows what they want the power for either. Why does he want the power? Why does he want the power source? Why does he want essentially a battery?
I don't think he knows.
What does he want it for?
That's what I think.
Yeah.
I don't think even he knows, and he just comes across as fucking, like, I don't mind, like, a stupid villain or, one that's a bit more simple, like a basic villain, and they just want very simple things. They're not this Machiavellian type. I don't mind that, but he just seems like he's just like, I want that thing because I want it. Yeah, I want it now.
And that's what it boils down to. There's literally no explanation of what they want to use the power for. I don't think, I can't remember. I might have zoned out completely, but... Because the witch has this power herself, that she's able to manipulate environments herself and other things around her. What is the end game for the power source? What is it going to do? I would have bought it if he said, I'm going to use this power to reignite, a secret chamber within this castle that we have so that I can rule over this planet and forge my own empire. I would have been like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's your endgame.
If he had like a massive turret that needed to be charged by this power and it would help him,
but there's no reason.
Or something. The idea of maybe having a massive gun or a special weapon that would kill a Gorax would make sense to me. Because that's kind of a legitimate threat within Endor and within those films, But again, it's just nothing. It's just like just a nothing thing. It's just a
plot device that goes nowhere.
I tell you what would have been better is if the dad gave Sindel the power source, and throughout the film they're chasing them.
Yeah,
that would make more sense. The fact that the villains get what they want straight away is boring to me. Like it's not. Again, the heroes don't get what they want, and the villains get what they want straight away. It's not like, Loki wanting to be locked up or, Wrath of Khan, wanting to be locked up and then they escape and it's all part of the plan. It's not like that. It's just, we got it. What do we do with it? Don't know. How does it work? Don't know. Should we ask that little girl? Sure.
Yeah, sure. Oh, she doesn't know either. Now what do we do? She's escaping. Chase
her.
Oh, wait, the Ewoks are all banding together. And end of film. And that's exactly what happens. Literally, that is exactly what happens. Tarak loses his shit because the girl goes, I don't know how it works. Mm. So he locks her up and the witch, Charol, locks them both up. And then the Ewoks and Noah, like Wicket and a couple of other Ewoks who they find still like, safe or whatever, come and rescue them all. And then there's a big chase, sort of like a Mad Max Fury Road kind of chase back to where it all started in the Ewok village. And
don't compare it to Mad Max. That's too cool to compare it to.
Oh God, yeah. But just in that basic sense, literally chasing them across like where the entire journey they've had before.
Yeah.
Back to the Ewok village, and the Ewoks get the upper hand and manage to turn over the entire battle in their favor.
Mm.
But the film's called Battle for Endor. There's no level of threat in the film to suggest that. The stake of Endor, the Endor is at stake itself, which I would have bought, like you said, if he was using this power source to make a weapon or to reignite the castle, which has some kind of power in it or something else in it. More pointedly, I probably would have, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about, these films using magic and everything, and say it's the Force, this power source, you could have used it as sort of like a proto thing that we get in Rogue One, where it's a kyber crystal. And kyber crystals were used to explain how the Death Star is able to amass that much power. But it might well have been a prototype kyber crystal kind of design, where this power source is a huge power source, even in its smallest fragment. It's able to create weapons, it's able to create, connections to other objects or people. Something a bit more akin to that. If it had been like, this is a kyber crystal, I can use this to make a weapon, you would have been like, oh, okay, he wants a lightsaber.
Yeah.
Because he's got a sword. He's got a massive fuck-off sword. Mm. What's the next stage up from using that sword? He's heard about, these legends of people using light swords. I want one of them. That's a good motivation for a villain. I want that. I want this power. Again, that's like Indiana Jones. What's in the Ark of the Covenant? It's power. So what do the Nazis want? They want that power. And they don't look at the dangers associated with the power because they just want the power. And you could have had that same thing. Maybe he gets a lightsaber and that's how he's defeated because Wicket gets the lightsaber and uses that against him, or he kills himself. You know, anything would have been better than what was in this, which is nothing. There is nothing in this. There's nothing in this. The power source amounts to nothing. It's just a throwaway plot device to get things moving, and not very much moves.
It feels like one of those 80s sword and sorcery movies, kind of like, you know, like Conan the Barbarian. You know, they steer right into the fantasy. Why not make that power source? You know, I get that they want to use the old ship of Noah's to get off the planet finally and go somewhere safe. I get that. But all this magic, if you're going to steer into the fantasy again, why not? What about some of the magical stuff that the Ewoks had in the first film? Why not?
Yeah.
You know, what if he finds out, he goes, oh, the Ewoks are really good at magic. Maybe I want one of these magical devices or something that was set up in the previous film. Like, some of the stuff does carry over, but they do seem very separate as well, very separate entities. Yeah. Even though they are a direct sequel to the other film, it still feels like very much its own thing. Tonally, it's different. You know, a lot of the actors aren't there. You know, it just feels very, very disconnected, especially that opening and the ending of the previous film. It just doesn't gel.
If you were to watch them back to back, you'd be like, what the fuck happened in between?
Well, I mean, I watched them both basically 2 days apart. And I did as well. And again, they felt utterly, completely different. It's just... I think, again, Wilfred Brimley does help because it feels a little bit more like a film. It feels like it's not just like a few kids have turned the camera on.
Yeah, there's no narrator in this at all. There's no narration. It literally is more like a film. And like you said, it does tap more into like a medieval-y kind of setting, which, you know... To me, these films are less Star Wars and more Dungeons and Dragons, more Lord of the Rings kind of thing. They have that feel of Lord of the Rings more than they do Star Wars. They're only Star Wars because some of the sound effects, some of the laser blasts sound like TIE fighters, and the Ewoks. Mm. For me, there's not much else of connected tissue towards Star Wars. Like I said, there's a reference to the Force, like the magic. The weapon, even the weapons don't really look Star Wars-y. They don't resemble, you know, if they had Imperial blasters or Rebel blasters, you know, for a Star Wars fan, you would have gone, oh, they've got Rebel blasters. Okay, you know, oh, I recognize that weapon. I recognize that look. Apart from the Ewok, you take the Ewoks out and put any other kind of creature in there, it's not a Star Wars film.
Yeah.
It just isn't.
Yeah, I agree. I have a theory. I think this...
Ooh, I like theories. Just like don't try and cover up the cracks.
Oh, no. It's not a fan theory or anything like that.
Oh, okay. An actual theory.
It's an actual theory. So even the costuming and the characters and the orcs do look very fantasy-inspired. Now, I'm thinking that either the idea or the nugget of the idea for the film Willow had begun... to kind of germinate, or that they were creating things for the film Willow, which is a fantasy film by Lucasfilm. You know, it's got Warwick Davis in it. You know, there's links, you know, and it feels more fantasy. So I think maybe, you know, they did use, like a lot of these films did use costumes and set and, you know, special effects and, you know, matte paintings, you name it, from the previous films, from Return of the Jedi. So why not? You know, why not? Would it be like a tester or trying to say, how do we do a good fantasy film? Or how do we, you know, we've cornered the action market with Indiana Jones, the period action piece. We've cornered the sci-fi market. How do we do fantasy and what do we do? And can we learn from this? And I reckon I don't know, I've not looked this up, but I reckon a lot of the team on this film probably went off and did Willow as well. Like they were still probably hired to do that. So I reckon there's some kind of connective tissue there, whatever that may be. I think there's definitely some kind of idea swirling in Lucas's brain or some of the other guys' brain. You know, we've got Warwick Davis. You know what? I tell you what the film reminds me of a little bit. It reminds me of Time Bandits. You ever seen Time Bandits?
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. I've watched it fully a couple of times, but I've never enjoyed it. But I know exactly where you're heading.
Yeah, because the reason they wanted a child actor, and they were like, well, we need, you know, characters of his stature, or it's going to be difficult to film. So they were like, we'll just hire little people to play the bandits, which, you know, makes sense to me. And I think maybe that's a lot of the thoughts behind these films, is that we've got Ewoks, you know, we can do it in one shot. If we have a child and a little person, you know, it's fine. We can just do that. So I reckon some of the ideas behind that. Now, we have lost the narration in this film, which I'm glad of.
Yeah.
However, we have introduced probably the more troubling canonical, you know, continuity issue of the talking Ewoks, because Wicket can now
speak
full English and looks absolutely creepy doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it is completely bizarre. It doesn't fit at all, but it's done purely for the basis of, well, we need to explain a few things. We can't just have Sindel crying all the time. Make him talk. And to me, that's it. There's no other creative decision around it, I don't think. And it does fuck with the canon of it. And like I said briefly, like, the idea is that Sindel and her family aren't talking actually English. They're talking a different language. Obviously, us as the viewer, he hears it as English, but the fan sort of like covering up the cracks of this is that the fan theory is that, oh, when Wicket meets Leia, he doesn't quite understand her because she's speaking proper English, like galactic English, whereas Sindel's family is speaking a variant language altogether. So they're humans, but they're not speaking galactic English. Bullshit. I think it's just. Oh shit! We're finding it really difficult to explain what's going on. Quick. Go for it. Say something, Warwick, if you want. Which is fine, because it's where Warwick finds his voice. And I think without this, you don't get Willow, like you were saying. So it's good in the sense that this is where Warwick gets his full acting opportunity. It is creepy. It looks creepy because they add like a loose jaw to when he's talking, which it's just flopping around. It's like he's broke his jaw and he's going, help me, please.
Yeah. It looks like he's got it on a string, and every time he speaks, he
somebody's underneath going, ay, 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 ay.
Yeah.
It's like, but like I said, it's great for Warwick Davis because it's his voice. You hear his voice, and it actually frees up his character a little bit. You see him jesting, and when he's saying he's trying to, like, when Noah comes over and he's like, "What are you doing here? Who are you?" You know. He's like trying to shield her and try and comfort her, you know, trying to look after her. So you get these extra gestures, these extra emotions. So it does free up Warwick Davis, but it just fundamentally, it's awful. It doesn't fit. It doesn't work. And I don't like it purely because I've read several fan things saying, oh, well, it is canon now. The Leia could talk to him. Well, she doesn't. She doesn't. They don't know what they're saying. That's why they use 3PO, to tell them not to eat them. Leia goes, 3PO, tell them they are our friends. So
he's the protocol. Just fuck off. He is the protocol droid. That's the whole thing. And he's, you know, again, it's stuff that is set up in Return of the Jedi where they're like, nah, it doesn't work for this film. So, you know.
But again, like you said, it just throws where does it sit? Where do these films sit?
Who knows? Do you want to know what the tagline for this movie was? Speaking of the battles and the because it is a bit more action-packed, this one, I will say.
Yeah.
There are a bit more kind of those fantasy battles or what you would expect from a kind of sword and sorcery fantasy movie. The tagline was, "The mightiest combat of the galaxies."
Galaxies?
Galaxies, yes. Plural.
Multiple galaxies.
This was the greatest of those battles, the mightiest of the combat in all of the galaxies ever, for all time. This, not Return of the Jedi, not that whole, not the Battle of Endor, the Battle for Endor. That was the one. That was the one.
Freaking hell. I mean, literally, in my brain has just flashed through literally all the major moments of the Battle of Endor, with the Falcon flying for all the ships, all the Star Destroyers, like Lando saying, bring all the Star Destroyers, go into the Star Destroyers, and they'll tear us apart, we'll last longer than we will versus a fucking Death Star. Epic moments. No, go fuck yourself. Battle of the Galaxies? Oh, who wrote that? Who wrote that? Come on. Jesus Christ. It's making me even more angrier. I actually think, like, spoiler alert, I think this film is somewhat better than Caravan of Courage, but I'm just angry. I'm just angry. I'm like Anakin now. I don't even have the high ground. I'm just... I just want to cut my own legs off.
Drop me off in Mustafar.
Take me to Mustafar and throw me into that fucking lava pit with that dickhead over there.
Oh, we're breaking so many people's hearts. Oh, dear. Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I am sorry. If you do like these films, I am sorry. But at the same time, oh, no, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I'm with you on this. And, you know, and I've put us both through this. You know, obviously you were going to do it. You know, you were already thinking about doing it, but I've instead put us both through these.
Yeah, the problem is I don't know how I'm going to do it myself for my own little channel review. I don't know how I'm going to do it and keep contained or... anything. I might just go full on out and get ridiculous. I don't know.
I think you should just make it like 30 seconds and just go, it's a piece of shit.
Yeah. I might do.
End of line.
I might do. That's a good idea, actually. But one thing I will say, like, speaking of positives, there is a big positive in this film for me, and it is the witch, Corral. And I think this witch, she has this magical sort of ring, this power charm, or whatever. And from what I'm reading, she's a precursor character for a set of figures called the Night Sisters. And the Night Sisters appear first in the Clone Wars TV series. And they're set on the same planet that Darth Maul comes from, Dathomir. So the same kind of civilization, same sort of people, and they use magic similar to the Force, but they use it to, you know, control elements and control life as well. So again, you're tapping into that whole sort of, like, you know, you can use the Force to create life and whatever. And they are very much magic. It's very much magic. Not much of it's explained, but they are very powerful beings. And like I said, you've got Darth Maul, who is a son of Dathomir, and another character who features very, very prominently, who's one of my most recently established, adored characters, Asajj Ventress, who is trained by Count Dooku. She is one of the Night Sisters. She is one of the daughters of the Night Sisters. So Corral is sort of like that prototype figure for the Night Sisters. So without Corral here, you wouldn't get Asajj Ventress. You probably wouldn't even get Darth Maul, because that sort of idea comes from all of that. So that is that's the main positive for me. And again, that just shows you sort of like when Disney, or well, not Disney, so to speak, but when certain elements of these Star Wars legends want to be uplifted, they can be uplifted to a perfect place. And like I said, Asajj Ventress, I've got her dual lightsabers right behind my head as well. And, you know, she's one of my favorite characters purely because of the way she looks, which again is very similar to the way Corral looks. And there is, I can't remember the lead Night Sister in the show, her name, but she very much looks like Corral in this. That grandiose sort of costuming, the jewelry, the look, the hair, even the style of acting, you know, the very sort of like very straight, very very much like you'd say like a stereotypical powerful witch that doesn't look all haggard or whatever. So she's beautiful. She's beautiful. She's got dark eyes, dark hair, but her eyes are really, really bright as well, and, you know, deep. You get that with sort of like the Night Sisters. You know, they are very beautiful creatures, but they're deadly. They will fucking kill you. So that is the main takeaway from this film for me, is that uplifting of the characters.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I love, that's one of the sections of the Clone Wars I absolutely love, the whole Night Sisters, Dathomir, Darth Maul, Savage Opress.
Savage Opress, yeah, brilliant.
Oh, so good. And voiced by the legend that is Clancy Brown, one of my favourite actors.
Yeah, when I heard the voice, I went, great character.
Yeah.
Great character. Immediately I was like, yes, they know exactly what they're doing with Savage.
Yeah, great, great storyline. You know, I love Asajj, you know, coming away from Count Dooku.
Brilliant.
Spoilers a little bit. I've just got up to a certain point. Again, it probably is spoilers for people who haven't watched it, but I won't ruin it. But her journey's amazing, great, interesting, fascinating. Again, there's a lot of good stuff in the Clone Wars, more good stuff than bad stuff. I love anything that focuses on the clones is great as well. I really like that. I watched one which I thought was going to be absolute shite as well, which was this frog general, and he commands a mission that's loads of astromech droids, and they have to kind of sneak in and grab like a microchip. Yeah. And that went on for like 5-6 episodes. And I thought it would be utter dog shit. I was like, this is going to be crap. But I ended up bloody loving those episodes. Yeah. If you can get me to care about any show that can get me to care about robots or androids or droids or clones, you know, you've got my money, you've got my attention. If you can make me care about those tertiary, you know, often not focused on characters, because there's so many great clone episodes with just the clones, and I think they're fantastic. When they're done well, they're done great. It's an amazing show. Probably one of the best Star Wars properties I've ever seen. Again, does have, you know, there's a lot of episodes, so there's a few stinkers in there, but
for the most part, quite a few.
And I can see why people wouldn't like it, because it is told out of, it's non-linear, so all the episodes are out of stories are out of order.
They're out of sync.
Yeah.
I mean, even for me, there's some of them that I'm sort of like, I'm not sure where it takes place exactly.
Yeah.
But you can find it. I mean,
yeah, I think the internet
places.
Yeah, yeah, I think the internet, well, I think someone's, I think people on the internet have listed the correct order to watch them in.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to do it, it's a bit painstaking to find each episode and go through.
I think one of them, you have to go all the way to like season four. When you're watching season one, you need to jump to season four to watch the episode, then jump back. And it's kind of like, yeah, I can't really be bothered doing that.
Yeah, I can't be asked either. So I'm just watching them as they were created.
Yeah, but like you said, like, you're made to care about the characters, some of the lower characters, lesser characters in the Clone Wars. Hmm. There's nothing in these two films where I care.
No.
And that's the problem. That's the problem with it. Star Wars has always been about creating characters that you care about, you feel invested in, you feel like you're on the journey with them. There's no characters here. Nothing does that. There's no sort of element where you go, oh, I understand, I want to be a part of that. You know, I feel for that journey. Yeah. No, it doesn't feel here. It feels like you said, a very tired 80s typical fantasy genre film that's swallowed up by better fantasy genre films.
Yeah.
Black Cauldron.
It's like a dark Disney movie. Yeah, it's kind of like that dark kind of children's era 80s movies, those kind of labyrinths and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Again, yeah, just swallowed up by likes of Labyrinth, which is better. Why?
Oh, yeah.
Because you're interested in the characters, you care about the characters. Even though David Bowie's character in Labyrinth is weird and freaky, you love it because he's interesting. You get invested in what he's trying to do, even though what he's trying to do doesn't really make sense. But you love it because you're like, the character's there. Hmm.
And it's Jim Henson, and they're all about character. Even the puppets are full of fucking character.
Exactly.
But here, the humans, you know, Sindel, like you were saying, we don't fucking care. Sindel has gone through the worst fucking, you know, abrupt death of her entire family in her life. And she can't act herself out of a paper bag. She can't fucking sing either, which is awful. Oh my God. I've never gone, oh, really? Really? Yeah, sing me that. Again, Wilford Brimley is putting so much into what he's given. I feel bad for him. And I remember people make fun of him. There's like a meme that goes around because he's got diabetes. He's always going like, I've got diabetes. I got the diabetes, you know, there's all those kind of memes about it. And I'm just like, I'd rather watch that. I'd rather watch a repetition of him pronouncing diabetes, you know, than hearing this fucking song.
That singing reminded me of when the girl sings in Hook. And I mean, like, I get it. I get what they're trying to do, trying to make it poignant and, you know, but
you don't care. You don't care. Because she's
doesn't
like,
work. Yeah, you just I'm don't sad. Care.
I'm sad. My parents are dead, and obviously off camera, like she can't cry because she's not even acting really.
Yeah.
Off camera, you know, someone's like licked their thumb and then put it down her cheek to imitate crying. But again, it's like, I'm sad. Beat, beat, beat. Frown. you know, it's again. You can just tell it's not there. She's just doing as she's told, and they turn the camera on, and they're just like, you know, we'll edit round this. And Wilford Brimley, you can tell he's been so supportive and so caring to all these little child actors or the little people that are acting. You know, he's doing such a you know, again, he is limited by the script and he's limited by the character, but I think he really is trying to make this special. You know, it's not his, you know, he's not on the level of like when he's in The Thing and he's like, don't trust Clark, you know.
Yeah,
he's gone fucking mad and he's putting his fingers in somebody's face, you know.
Yeah,
it's nowhere near that level, but I get that he's trying and I can see that he's trying. I can see that he's at least attempting. Like everybody else is like, you know, we've got non-talking characters who are now talking. And even then, like you said, like Warwick, again, is doing the best he can, but he's limited by the props, the costume, the script, the writing, the everything else that's going on. I always feel bad because, you know, we've been actors, we've acted. I always feel bad for the acting things because they're always like, you know, and even the ones that seem to be bad, you know, especially in Lucas productions, I'm always like, is it the writing? Is it the direction? You know, is he just saying quicker and more intense all the time? Is that all he's saying? Yeah. is it? Because at the end of the day, it's kind of really down to the director to get the performance.
Well, yeah, I've experienced it firsthand with like just terrible, terrible writing and terrible decisions. Mm. And like I did bloody Punch and Judy, a live action version of Punch and Judy on stage. And in hindsight, it was the worst decision you could possibly imagine because the writing's not there for a stage production of it. So what came across, what was meant to be harmless and, you know, sort of like with an
like
element
a callback.
Of like, oh. Yeah, like a callback or like with an element of like, oh, be careful what you wish for, be careful, you know, what you do to others, bullying and all this. It didn't come across, came across creepy, came across violent. Mm. And very, very fucking disturbing.
Mm.
And a lot of schools that we took it to, a lot of performances we had, the reaction was just completely like, oh God, what is this? And that's what you get with this. I mean, the weight was put on mine and, you know, Nathan's shoulder to really sell every aspect of it. And you can see that with Wilford Brimley. You can see the weight of knowing he's in a Star Wars film.
Mm.
And trying to make it work. And you can see that and you can hear it in the way in his acting. He's sort of like giving everything to it, you know, whether it be 78%, whatever, you can see that he's still giving it.
Yeah.
And there's no payoff. There's no payoff to it because there's no payoff in the script. There's no payoff in the writing. Similar to Punch and Judy, there was no payoff in the writing or the script or the direction to make it work.
And again, like I've been in similar acting situations. You kind of just, you know, you come up with an interesting idea for a character or you've got an idea or you want, because you want it to be a collaborative process. That's the end of the idea. You want to feel, I remember I did a play about the first women's football team ever. And I was asked to play.
Great story.
Yeah.
Absolutely great story.
Inspiring. And it was set during World War One. You know, again, it was very much like fringe kind of theatre. It wasn't paid, you know, and I had to play an abusive husband. One of the characters was an abusive husband. And I said, right, I've got this really good idea. He's shell-shocked. He's not really sure what he's doing. You know, he's lashing out, but he instantly regrets it. He doesn't know how to manage his feelings. And they said, nah, don't want that. They said, just be a stereotypical wife beater. And I was like, so either I can go against that, what the director has said, or I can give them exactly what they want. And I decided to just give them what they wanted. And I remember, you know, our friends Nathan and Matt, his brother, came and they were just like, I'm sorry, but that was an awful play. And I was like, yeah, it's not great. And they were like, and they looked at my performance as the wife beater and like, we're really sorry, Dan, but that was not great. And I was like, I understand.
Yeah, you want people to tell you that as well. You want people to tell you that it's not been great. But like for me, like when I don't act anymore, but that's the way I look at it. That's the way I review films. That's how I review media from like sort of like that. I'm not a successful actor. I never was, but I did enough work, you know, to sort of inform some of the decisions that I would try and take into what I was doing. Like you say, if somebody says, oh, don't do that, I'd still be like, okay, if you don't want me to express it that way, you know, I'd still try and use some of those thought processes to try and enhance for myself the character. For example, I read something about Adam Driver for Kylo Ren, where basically he said, like, he tried to create sort of like a backstory for himself to build upon, to create, to take the character to where it was going, because obviously they didn't want to give him too much information, you know, about what was going to happen in Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, because let's face it, they were writing it on the fly. So he was creating sort of like a, you know, a backstory for his character, and he took it to them and he said, look, this is what I think, this is how we're going to go, you know, I think, you know, this is where the character would go, and they shut it down completely. I mean, Adam Driver is a really good fucking actor. He's probably the best actor in those films, apart from Domhnall Gleeson, and Domhnall Gleeson gets completely shat on.
Yeah.
Sorry again, Last Jedi fans, Rise of Skywalker fans. It's just my personal opinion, but yeah, they undermined the actors. You got actors of such prowess, you know, in those films. Oscar
such
Isaac
caliber.
As well.
Yeah
Oscar caliber. Isaac as well. You know, you've got to give and take. Like you said, it's a collaborative process. If you're creating something from scratch, something brand new, and you're hiring actors or whatever, you know, you want to give them something so that they can give you something in return.
Absolutely.
And from what I was reading about Adam Driver, you know, he wanted to put that in. Same thing with John Boyega as well. He wanted to put certain things in. All of it was shot down.
Yeah.
All of it was shot down. And that's in public record now as well. That's not just me making it up. That's in public record. Like, John Boyega offered certain things. Oscar Isaac offered certain things. Adam Driver, you know, they were all shot down. All shot down.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing probably with here. You know, that's not the same thing in these films. Because obviously, I don't think there was probably much sort of like creative collaboration. But, you know, they could have done a bit more with Wilfred Brimley, I think. They could have given him some help.
Yeah.
I think more than anything.
I reckon
even a scene with the witch probably would have enhanced this film just a little bit better. Because who killed his friend? Who killed his pilot? You know, I wanted to see some kind of reaction between the three of them. You know, Tarek, if that's his name, the witch, and Noah. I wanted to see that
something.
Sort of like resolution. A resolution there.
Yeah.
Acceptance of my friend is dead rather than Sindel telling me, oh, he's dead, by the way. I saw his bones.
I was just about to mention that. He makes this whole thing about, oh, you know what? I realized that my friend probably is never coming back, probably is dead. You know, yeah. I've been here for so long, you know.
He's stuck on the fucking planet himself. He's stuck on Endor.
Yeah. And it's a tragedy. It's something to connect those two characters, Sindel's tragedy and Noah's tragedy. And then she's just like, oh, by the way, your mate's dead.
Yeah, and he saw his bones.
Yeah, I saw his bones, by the way. They told him about the power and all that sort of stuff. And then he just like, right, whatever, we've got to escape this castle. Puts the bomb on the wall, and they're out.
Yeah, there's no emotional no emotional resolution to it. That's annoying. I mean, he's talking to the witch through the cell.
Mm.
You know, she's still in the cell, and she's not been released. And she's like, help, let me out, and I can help you. I can help you because Tarek lost his mind. You know, there could have been some moment there of sort of reconciliation, like, I made a mistake. Your friend didn't deserve to die. Tarek's just completely insane. I've been corrupted because of my power. But yeah, it all just moves on too quickly. And at the end, Tarek steals her power and he dies because of it. And there's nothing else to it. There's literally nothing else to it.
Arguably, the most powerful item in the film is Carral's ring, and then it kind of gets smashed, and then again, it's not really explained, but I guess you don't really need it to be explained too much, but it gets smashed in a battle with Brimley and Tarek, and then he just kind of turns to stone. That's kind of how it ends. I do think this film as well has the audacity, I will say audacity, to steal from themselves the scene from New Hope with the turrets, you know, and the TIE fighters come in, and it's like, you know, don't get cocky, kid, because they take the power source, activate the old ship, and they jump into the turrets to shoot the orcs. And I was like, are you fucking kidding? Come on. Like,
the Ewoks are yet again superbly skilled in
operating operating star weaponry.
But like in Return of the Jedi, it was good because, you know, it sort of like paralleled American Indians and their evolution from, you know,
yeah.
Native Americans, rather, of, you know, evolving, getting together, you know, muskets and whatever, and using them in their own tactics. So, yeah, you can kind of see it, but it all feels just like it needs to happen, so we're going to make it happen, and that is it. And it's rubbish. It's rubbish. It's literally rubbish. The last little fight between Tarek and Noah is... Yeah, again, like I said, that's resolution, but it doesn't resolve anything. There's no sort of like moment where they go, I killed your friend and I'm going to kill you. There's not even that. Not even that. And Tarek can talk. We hear him talk, and yet he doesn't say anything to Noah. You're telling me 25 years that Noah's been stuck on that planet, he hasn't come across Tarek? Go fuck yourself.
During that fight as well, again, like, you know, with Sindel's acting, I was talking about beat, smile and stuff like that. For that fight, it's the same because you hit...
The choreography is terrible.
Yeah, and you've done fight choreography. You trained in fight choreography, so you know what that should be.
Yeah, in the basic sense, it's like, you know, advertising your strokes, advertising where you're going, you know, even just like a bit of speed. It's literally just like, I'm going this way, ang, now under here, ang. You're like, oh my God, just kill each other.
Oh God.
I'm a very big fan of, like, in fight scenes, you're supposed to be trying to kill your opponent. So if you're not aiming for a point where you'll either maim them severely or kill them directly, then I don't buy your action sequence. So sword fights, if they're just swinging to make a noise, I don't buy it. Like,
don't care.
My main point is, I go back to The Phantom Menace, that fight scene, every stroke that you see Darth Maul trying to hit, he's aiming for either their head, their legs, or their arms. So he's trying to disable them. Whereas in Revenge of the Sith, they're just spinning the lightsaber at the end.
Yeah, pointless.
Just spinning them and doing twirls and whatever. Darth Maul does the twirls, but the ferocity in when he goes in to strike, when it's just him and Obi-Wan in the last little bit, the ferocity of the strikes, you look where he's positioning the blades, they're all going towards Obi-Wan's head or to his legs. In this, very similar to Revenge of the Sith, they're just swinging them to make it look good. They do a couple of twirls, they get thrown over, and then, there's no follow-up strike. So somebody gets thrown over, there's no follow-up strike. It's rubbish. Rubbish.
It is rubbish. It's another rubbish film. Now, I've got two last points, and then we have to compare them because we've got like 20 minutes, about 20 minutes left. I'm not having a third part, so
no.
we're gonna get started very soon. So, speaking of fan theories, there is a fan theory that Sindel, who leaves the planet of Endor at the end of this film, spoilers if you are ever going to watch these. She leaves, and there's a fan theory that she grows up to be Captain Phasma, apparently. So a fan theory. It's not confirmed, but there's a theory because she has blonde hair, that she, you know, short blonde hair, she becomes Captain Phasma. However, there was a Legends novel, a Star Wars Legends novel, called Tyrant's Test. Now, a grown-up, an adult, Sindel. Now, every time I say Sindel, I just think of the Mortal Kombat character from Annihilation.
Oh, God. Too bad you will die.
Yeah. I just always picture her every time I say Sindel. Now, she's an adult. She's a reporter. She's on Coruscant. Interviews a guy, a former stormtrooper who survived the Battle of Endor called Hume Tal. Now, in an interview, he says that the New Republic have played down the atrocities and war crimes committed on the stormtroopers and the Empire by the Ewoks, and is like, this, I was there, man. I saw, you didn't see what I saw. I was there. You weren't there, man. I saw the butchery, the cannibalism. What about those war crimes, eh? What about those? When is somebody going to answer for them? When are the Ewoks going to answer for those war crimes?
I mean, he's not wrong, is he?
No, he's not.
The Ewoks do kind of probably eat the stormtroopers.
Yeah.
You see them at in the celebration, like, they've made drums out of the stormtroopers' helmets. Like, okay.
To be fair, there is some, I think it might still be in the Legends canon and the Star Wars Legends, that debris from the second Death Star comes down and kind of hits a lot of, kills off a lot of the Ewoks, apparently.
Yeah, I remember reading that as well, yeah. But that was in Legends, yeah, that parts of the Death Star crash landed into...
Ewok Village.
Into Endor and caused untold climatic damage that set them back. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite funny. But,
I mean, also, one last point. Are the Ewoks, like, from the ghetto? Because they're not up in the trees.
Yeah. You do in Caravan of Courage, you do briefly see, like, an upshot of them being in the trees. And then in Battle for Endor, they're on the ground in a nice, lovely village.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, couldn't afford the budget to make tree houses, I guess.
No. Oh, well. Right. Let's start our comparison. Let's please end this torture.
Oh, well.
This is a Star Wars war crime in itself. Both of these films are a war crime.
Yeah,
a Star Wars crime, if you will.
Yeah, very good.
So as usual, we have five categories for comparison. The first one is writing. So which out of these two films do you think has the best writing?
You know what? I would probably say maybe Battle for Endor, purely because of Noah. I'm clutching at straws, I've got to be honest.
It's hard. They're both very, very bad.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just in the basic sense of, like, having Mr. Brimley. Battle for Endor. God almighty.
Yeah. So, this is hard. This is actually quite a hard choice to make between both of them. That's why it's kind of, in a way, it's a good comparison podcast for that.
Yeah. I mean, because, like, usually I have, like, several thoughts swimming around. When we've done this before, I've had, like, several thoughts swimming about, like, pros and cons. I don't have any for the writing. I don't have any pros other than the very simplest basic things of,
yeah.
Got the actor. The actor's done his best. Okay.
I'm actually going to give this to Caravan of Courage because I just think the plot is stronger. The storyline is stronger. The through line is stronger. It's not as random or weird or as flimsy a plot. Like, you know the goal, you know where they're going, you know what they need to do. You know, there's all these kind of side journeys and side missions. Yeah. But I think I'm going to give it to Caravan of Courage. So that's one each.
Yeah.
Okay. The next category is acting. Film has the best acting in it?
Battle for Endor again, purely because of Mr. Brimley.
I'm going to agree. I think Sindel has improved slightly in her acting. Again, we get a bit more Warwick, like you said, with his physicality and speaking. And also you've got Wilford Brimley doing the heavy lifting. You know, obviously there's other characters like Corral and stuff, but again, like you said, it's Wilford Brimley's
Yes. So that's, I mean, I can't think of any notable moments in Caravan that has decent acting, because, like you said, it's all over encumbered by Mace's weird character choices and his weird sort of, like, reaction to everything, which again I think is just poor direction, really. I think it's just
angry. It's just constantly angry. That's his one thing. It's never like, oh, I'm sad now. It's like, I'm slightly less angry now. These are my levels of anger. So I'm a 10 now. Oh, now I'm a 2 because the Ewok just saved me from drowning with a magic stick, you know.
Yeah. Oh, God, that scene is awful.
Yeah, that is a bad scene.
Magic stick. Oh, God, Mr. MacGuffin number 4. Yeah. We need to create some kind of moment of tension. Give them a magic stick so we can drown Mace and then they can save him.
God, I wish
they did. Oh, because it just happens.
I wish they drowned him then instead of in the second film, got rid of him. In a way, it's kind of a good thing they probably got rid of him. But then again, I'm not sure. Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay, moving on. Whew, this has been a long one. This has been exhausting. This has been an exhausting watch, and it's been good. It's been good, but it has been.
It has been good, yeah. I mean,
been fun.
It's been good.
It's nice to look back on these lesser known films and kind of see the mistakes that were made. So, next one, luckily, is probably the best element of both of these films. It's the music. So, which film do you think had the better music, better score? What do you think?
I think Caravan had the better score because it feels a bit more, because they're going on a journey, the journey's quite grand, it's quite, there's quite a spectacle to the journey. You do get a lot of elements, a lot of, you know, like John Williams-esque elements in Caravan. In, and I can remember certain keys and moments in Caravan. Battle for Endor, the score doesn't quite match what's going on. I think that's because the film just doesn't know what it's doing either. I think Caravan.
Yeah.
For me,
I agree. I think Caravan as well, because even though it has its own unit, like, I think Battle for Endor could, as good as the music is, that doesn't feel like Star Wars to me. It just feels like a generic fantasy, whimsical score, which is fine, there's nothing wrong with that. And it is good in its own right. But you do get a sprinkling of John Williams in Caravan, which you don't get in Battle for Endor. And that made me, even the little kind of Endor themes and notes and stuff, that's enough for me to go, oh, yeah, it feels like Star Wars. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Star Wars.
You do get some of those. You do get quite a lot of wide shots in Caravan of, like, you know, when it's nighttime and they're looking at the stars and there's like that, you know, Endor's mother planet, if you like, or, you know, just there, and you get those little inflections of that Star Wars kind of, you know,
the grand scale of everything. Yeah.
You get those tones in the music in Caravan. I said it like when early on that the music is really, really good. Probably the most positive aspect of Caravan is the music.
Yeah. So that's music. So moving on to the next one, it's probably, I think this is probably one of the tougher categories. It's cinematography. So which had the better look, basically? So I think this is a hard one.
Again, I'd probably go with Caravan, purely because, like, again, like the wider sort of, like, the use of the, you know, the matte paintings in the backdrop combined with, you know, the foreground of, you know, a very real forest on the Skywalker Ranch and things like that. Even the fucking desert, which is a load of shit, you know, it looks pretty good. It looks pretty good. I think the modelings of the castle and the way they take the shots and look up at the castle where the Gorax is, you know, it's very, very, very grandiose. It fits better than what we see in sort of the editing and cinematography for Battle for Endor, which is all very flashed and rushed together because it's all more fighting and whatever.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't quite work because it's all very, there's a lot of jump cuts and edits in Battle for Endor.
Or some horrible smash cuts.
Some terrible ones. Absolutely terrible, terrible. And yeah, I think the cinematography, because it's allowed to flow a bit better in Caravan. There are a lot of establishing shots, a lot of, you know, wide angle moments where we're just watching the Ewoks, especially at the start when the Ewoks are fiddling around with that, you know, flying contraption and whatever. Mm. Yeah, it's a little bit better there.
No, you've taken the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say Caravan as well. I just agree with everything that you've just said, so I'm not going to repeat anything that you've just said.
I think
you've hit the nail on the head for me as well. It's just better. Yeah, there's a horrible smash cut I remember in Battle for Endor where the music's playing in one scene, smash cut into halfway, the music is playing for another one. Different music. I was like, oh, that's horrible. That's the one of the worst transitions I've ever seen on film. In one of the worst films I've ever seen. So there we go.
Okay. It's just shocking.
It's really bad. It's really bad. Okay. So final is direction. Which do you think was the better directed of the two films? Again, I think this is, again, another tough one to compare.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't know.
It's tough.
I'm really, really struggling.
I think if you're looking for an action movie, like a more kind of straightforward action movie,
fantasy action movie, yeah, you'd probably go Battle for Endor.
But if you're looking for like a A to B story, one that's more kid friendly, and it's a bit more whimsical because the other one's a bit dark.
So I
think it just depends on your taste, kind of. But I think I'm going to have to give it to Caravan again because
I'm thinking that myself. Just thinking of what you just said there.
Yeah,
basic elements of it.
It works. The editing's better. It flows a bit better. It's still slow as fuck. like the other one again, start Battle for Endor does start. It's a bit more exciting. It's a bit more like you know. It,
but then the middle falls into that massive pit.
Yeah.
Of creative rubbish.
Where do we go? Oh, we'll just sit in this. We'll sit on the, in the forest for a bit.
Yeah.
It's the Deathly Hallows Part One. Oh, what should we do for this film? Oh, we'll just all three of us will just be angry in a forest and jealous of each other. That's great. Yeah, I want to.
Oh, crap, that is.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think again talking about the editing and the sloppy editing. Again, it's more action packed, but it's not as again the plot is really flimsy, and I think again that suffers. Like online, I think a lot of people prefer this one because it's Battle for Endor, because
yeah,
it's more action packed. There's a bit more going on.
Yeah, but that's just surface. That's like, oh, it's better because there's action. It doesn't necessarily make up for
the
even worse inadequacies of the story.
Yeah, I agree. I think they've overcorrected themselves in Battle for Endor, because obviously Caravan's a lot slower. It's a lot. You know, it's a lot more paced, and it's, you know, it's a bit more, you could, it's more dull. I would say it's dull. And I think they've gone, well, that was dull. So now just edit to the action. Quick, cut to the action. Quick.
Yeah.
And again, that hampers the film. And again, it's like, oh, we don't need to worry about plot. Just keep it pacey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Keep that brevity, keep it going. And then people won't complain and blah. you know, it is effective, but it also lets the film down as well.
Yeah. Definitely.
So I've got to give it to Caravan.
Yeah, I will as well.
So that was for writing. You gave it to Endor. I gave it to Caravan for acting. We both gave it to Endor. Music, Caravan. Cinematography, Caravan. And direction, Caravan. So the winner, the victor of the Clone Wars, if you can even call it a victor, is Caravan. Of Courage. So if you are going to watch any of these Ewok movies, watch Caravan of Courage, but I would not recommend them, any of them at all. But that is the best of the worst of the Star Wars movies ever seen.
I think really, if you're going to watch any of these Ewok movies, watch Return of the Jedi.
Absolutely, yes.
To be fair, just don't. It may actually sour your opinions on like the Ewoks even further.
Ewoks and maybe Star Wars in general.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the danger of it, isn't it? It's like, what were they thinking?
What?
I mean, that's the thing for me. I think, like, just looking at it, what were they thinking?
What were they thinking? I don't think they were thinking.
No, but that's just it. Was it pure hubris? You know,
they are Terak. They haven't got a plan. They haven't got an end game. They are the Terak. They're like, we'll just do it for the sake of doing it. Money, yeah. I guess. Money. We want money. Okay.
Just creative hubris, I think. I mean, yeah. And for me, I'm seeing that in, you know, Star Wars at the moment, in terms of the films, just creative hubris. I don't think there was any grand plan for these films, other than the holiday special was crap. We need to make something better. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to spearhead it. This is what it's going to be. And like you said, Tony Farina said, you know, where did George Lucas jump the shark? And I think it was these films, because it was like, we made money. We need to keep this in the public's eyes.
Yeah.
More action figures, more toys. Great. I've got all the toys behind me.
Yeah.
Great. Keep giving me toys. I'll buy them. You know, Lego, all that. But at the time, I think it was a case of, we need to keep Star Wars in the public eye, because, to be fair, they didn't know where they were going with Star Wars after the original trilogy. And I think these films probably actually had a more detrimental effect on slowing down the process of carrying on with the series. I don't think anybody probably admit it. That's probably me just maybe over-speculating, but just looking at it, I think people would have gone, we've had the holiday special, which came out, you know, before Empire. It's not great. And then after Return of the Jedi has been done, we created this, and then they create the cartoon series, which was garbage as well. And I think probably a lot of people are like, let's just sit on it for a while. And a while turned into a few decades. So,
yeah. I mean, we got all the extended universe stuff, we got the legend stuff, and that often that stuff is really good. I love the comics, I love Dark Horse comics and all that sort of stuff. Novels were very popular as well, and you know, all that other stuff.
Heir to the Empire novels, bloody great.
Yeah,
bloody great. They're the ones I read. They're the ones that a lot of people say the sequel trilogy should have followed, really. And after the culmination of this sequel trilogy we've got, I think they should have as well. I think they should have. The greatest disaster for me is Disney going, it's Legends, and we'll never speak of it again. And you can see by the fact they brought Thrawn back and, you know, all these other elements. Yeah, I can see it. I can see it now. They've probably gone, maybe we made a little bit of a mistake. I don't. They say they made a full mistake, because there's no way these sequels will ever get retconned or whatever.
Absolutely, and like you said, let's never speak of them again.
Yes.
So that is the end of this podcast. It has been long, but it has been great as usual. I don't mind doing.
I've enjoyed myself to a T.
So, Andy, where can people find your YouTube channel and your social medias and everything? Because they need to watch some more of your angry reviews, just like this one.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I don't think I've made anything so angry as this, but you can find me at Angry Andy Reviews on YouTube. I'm on Twitter at Andy_review. Also on Instagram as well. I've just started that up. I can't remember what that is off the top of my head. I think
it's Andy.
Angry.
I'll tag you in it, because it's like Andy and then a number, isn't it?
Yeah, Andy, Andy 1138, I think, something like that. I don't know. I've just started up, but yeah. The main go-to area is Angry Andy Reviews on YouTube. All the other connections are on there as well.
Yeah, the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram. Yeah, the Instagram's brand new, so guys, sign up to the Instagram, because again, it's all good content. I'm enjoying it. It's really good. So, and I'll tag Andy in it. You can find me at Secret Balls on Facebook, or at Dan_Balls on Twitter, Spider Dan Secret Balls on Instagram. And don't forget to use the hashtag Prepare for Prattle when you interact. For everything else you need to know about the podcast, swing over to SpiderDanAndTheSecretBalls.com on the World Wide Web to email me, read reviews, and learn how you can support the podcast. Speaking of supporting the podcast, I'd like to thank my patrons on Patreon, Iron Jack's Musings, Paul Mellor, Max Byrne, Tony Farina, and Scott Hodgson. Thank you for continuing to donate. It is very much appreciated and helps Prattle World keep on turning. So thank you very much, guys, and thank you, Andy. This has been great. So so I'm gonna sign off.
What are we gonna do next?
Don't worry, we've got Samurai Month coming up, and we're gonna actually look at some good films.
Yes.
So I'll make up for this. I promise I'll make up for this. So
I hope so.